I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Red Room.
Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminished and the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed in the rent room. We let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want.
Welcome to the Rant Room.
What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest. You guys are listening to the Screenwriters Rant Room, where we keep it real, we keep it opinionated, we keep it what, everybody?
2019.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. On this show, we discuss entertainment, TV, film, music, culture, but our focus is always screenwriting, stories, craft, and shit like that. Why are you staring at me all crazy?
I saw the
like
Batman... I saw the bike outside.
You saw me scooter.
I saw your scooter. And I said, I should hop on it. But I was like, dang, it's so cute. It's the Batman one. So yeah. It's one of my favorite ones. Yeah. Yes, I can always tell when you're talented, either for your cars or your scooters. And I'm like, oh, there's Billy.
To the thing on the Clash, the next episode.
Oh, of course.
It's dope.
I haven't heard the next one.
Oh, it's so dope.
But I heard the first one.
Yeah. Oh, it's
awesome. What's it called again?
It's
an awesome weird podcast. Ass name.
It's a podcast that Chuck D is narrator on. It's the history of the Clash.
Okay.
Yeah, we had it in our show notes on one of our episodes.
But it
yeah.
was dope as hell. The next episodes are dope. Real dope.
Awesome. So, welcome to the show. How you doing, Lisa?
Cole, I'm good.
Jam.
Hey, traffic wasn't as bad as I thought, because you know they have an L.A. marathon every year up here. But they usually have an early in the morning, like 6, so I wasn't really worried. When you're like, make sure, I'm like...
Right.
So I decided to test myself. Usually I'll leave like 8. I'm down in Dago, and I was at the beach. So, you know, it's, hey, you know, the weather's warming
what
up a little bit.
What time did you up at the beach, girl?
I was out there about 5:30. No, we just go out, like a couple friends will go out and we go dunk our hair in the water, seawater. No, it's just been a rough month. Like last month, my little Ripley passed away. My dog passed away after 17 years. So, and she was named after Ellen Ripley from Aliens. And I kid you not, the last movie we watched together before she passed on was the Alien movie. We were watching Horror Noir. And then my mom said, we should watch the Alien movie because Ripley's not feeling all that great. And I didn't want to tell my mom, well, she's on her way out.
Right.
And so we watched the Alien and I kept looking at her going, that's who you're named after, Sigourney Weaver's character. So yeah, so a bunch of my friend and my other friend, she had to put her dog down, her little pit bull. It had like water on the lungs, pneumonia, and a bunch of stuff. Mm. So young dog, a real beautiful pit bull, just a lovely dog. It's like one of those British pit bulls, like the Spuds McKinney, Gort, Zira. So before our dogs, we went to the beach and just kind of dunked our hair and had our little goodbyes to our pets. That's
what's cute. The guy's name? You know, the guy, Petey. Petey from the Little Rascals.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Which is something that no one even watches anymore.
Was that the name of the dog?
Petey, yeah.
He's
a pit bull.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
It's too racist for him to watch now.
I know, oh my God.
Wait, it was racist then.
Oh,
I said too racist. It was racist.
It was racist back then. But when that's all you got.
We was like, a Negro's on TV.
I'm sitting there eating my cream of wheat. You know what? I'm just going to roll with it.
Yeah.
When the little girls came up there with the little pigtails and they do the singing and stuff. Listen. And they look like you, and you're just like, you know what, Lord Jesus?
Oh, no. I'll tell you the worst. And
you
start, I'll tell you the
you
worst.
You know it's bad when you hum in gospel show tunes at 5 years old trying to get through the day. Lord.
I'm going to say the worst ever offense that I saw in the Little Rascals was...
The one?
No, I'm telling you.
So what's the one that tipped you over the edge?
The really pushed you over the edge was, there was one where... Stymie was sitting on a stove because he was stuck in a stove in a hot pot and he wiped his head like this and threw the sweat against the wall and it was like black ink.
No.
Yes. It was like Indian ink on the wall. I was like, God damn, that's fucked up.
Damn.
That's so fucked up.
And if you guys are any fans of the 70s TV shows, you might remember Stymie when he got older and he was on the Red Fox television show as one of the old buddies. So a lot of those actors you'll see on the old TV shows.
When you get a little older.
You're like, yeah.
They came from
Beretta.
They came from vaudeville and shit.
Beretta.
Beretta was the
I used to love Beretta.
What's his name?
Robert.
Hey. Yeah, I know.
Who killed his person.
Yeah. And I used to know his son, too, Noah.
But he was on The Little Rascals, too. What was his name?
He played the little bad guy.
He played Butch.
Little Butch. He was Butch.
No.
Was it Butch?
No, he's his friend.
Yeah, who was his name? Beretta. You know who Beretta is. What the hell is Beretta's name? We check his name.
Noah?
No, his name
Blake.
is...
Robert Blake.
And mm-hmm. he was in The Little Rascals. He played he was friends with Dennis Hopper and shit like that.
Oh, I'm not sure.
That's when those crews like go way back.
Yeah.
Anywho.
Yeah.
So y'all hear his voice, Chris Derrick in the house, mm-hmm. writer, producer, cinephile, director himself.
Yeah, man.
Why did I just learn that my man is a Buddhist today? Ain't that a bitch? He been keeping a secret.
I talk about how people need to keep secrets. Not to keep secrets. People to keep.
He wants to be a man of mystery. He wants to
man of mystery.
Things.
His name is Mickey in our gang. That was his name.
Okay,
Mickey.
That sounds familiar.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Things are good. You know, I'm working the pilots and stuff for the staffing season. So, and I got some feelers out to some names, and then good. I'm at. That thing with DMA, like at Disney, turned out to be an interesting mm-hmm. opportunity. We'll see. There's like a 50 Cent show that they're gonna try to push me for, and a comic book adaptation by Greg Rucka, Stumptown. So then some other stuff, you know. Right. It's I think with this whole agency situation, there's disruption in the process.
We're voting this week.
That happens. Yes. And the disruption.
Well, we'll see.
There's always opportunities in disruption. So,
yeah,
I'm looking forward.
In the midst of turmoil and change.
Yes, that's
the
right.
Hustlers
are right.
Always.
Hustlers got to be ready.
Hustlers got to be ready.
Know? There's always people shaking in the boots. Like, how do I get stuff? And I was like, motherfucker, I'm going to take
okay,
your job.
Listen,
if you're up here scared, I'm taking your job.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
And that's the interesting thing is, like, we did the panel the other night for the NAACP and Image Awards. So mm-hmm. we have some of the kids in the room today. Amber, forgive me.
Danielle.
Dallas. And then Dallas Rico in the house. So we have a couple of young baby riders in the house. And one of the things I love about those, like doing the panels and doing this podcast, is I really want to educate the young riders. You know, that's why we started this thing right. in the first place.
Right.
Because we were.
Parking lot conversations.
We were having these conversations
talking at the parking lot.
Organization Black Screenwriters.
Yeah.
And we were like, we need to open this thing up and we need to, you know, we need a bigger voice. And so. I love where you're going, Chris. Like, Chris and I made a pact last year that we were going to start asking for what we want, right? Which is why things are starting to turn. Before, you and I, how many people do all of us know that
And to quote Solange's new album, When I Get Home, Almeida, do nothing without intention.
Do nothing without intention. And so, a lot of us here in LA, we all know somebody, right? We all have met somebody, we know somebody that... The problem that I've ran against, and we've talked about it many times, is having that bump where when do you ask for the favor, mm-hmm. right?
Exactly.
At some point, and it's kind of like the same thing about people ask you to be their mentor or whatever. Mm-hmm. You don't ask somebody to be their mentor. They become your mentor because you're just mm-hmm. fucking around all the time. You know what I mean? Or as I like to say, you become handy, mm-hmm.
yeah.
right? Excuse me, my nose is all stuffed. This freaking weather's killing me. So the reason I'm saying all this is just piggybacking off what you were talking about is how you move to LA, you come here, and things either start to happen fast or they happen really, really slow. What your job is while it's going slow, is to keep realizing what you're getting out of it.
Yeah.
Even the little things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Okay, so two things on that is that I was, you know, because we're going to talk about this thing afterwards, sure. but it's like what I realized is that one, when you know, asking better questions gets you better results.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to figure out these questions that I'm going to ask someone tomorrow who's got a really tight window. Mm-hmm. And the thing, because he's going out of country for 3 months to shoot something. So to me, it's like, how do I just get like quick stuff from him? It's going right. to be so right. smart questions. But the thing about it is that I'm saying to myself, I was like, look, he's like 10, 20 years farther on the path that I am. So I got to like imagine... You know, what do I need to say to him so, you know, to understand that? So it's the right kind of like pathway to know. So, you know, because like he got to respect me. I mean, he totally does, but it's like, but every interaction has to maintain that respect. And so, you know, so like that's the big thing about what that is. And also, I bother him that much. Like, I haven't really talked to him. It's like if you stay in touch with someone every 3 to 6 to 9 months, you know, that's like a or like that's a good time to be on someone's radar who's really, really busy, because they're really busy and they don't have time to just be, you know, be hanging out, and their head is all in the clouds, not in the clouds, but it's still caught up. That's the thing I think is the mistake that that you and I were making, is that people that we know, they know us and they know that we're trying to do these kind of things, but we're not always on the top of their mind because we're not like constantly like pegging them on the back.
And even further than that, we're always working on something.
Yeah.
So it doesn't look like we're in need.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's a big problem too. So you have to make sure one of our adjustments is we're doing this and we do that.
Yeah.
We usually just talk about that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That was a flip.
Yeah.
So yeah, totally. What's up, Amber?
Hi.
You got to go a little closer to Mike.
Hi.
So, like I said, I wanted to have some of these young writers on the show. Amber sent us an email. What was your email basically asking us? I can't remember off the top of my head. I get a lot of them. That's enough. So,
10 seconds.
Well, basically, I just wanted to let you guys know that I really love you guys' podcast. It's so informative. I feel like obviously you guys have a voice that, like, I listen to a lot, but you guys have a voice that isn't really out there. You're telling me stuff that can, like, help specifically me. Oh. I think my first thing was, like, should I move to LA? I think it was, should I move to LA? Mm-hmm. Or, because you guys did a podcast about LA.
Right.
And I listened to that, and I had one follow-up question.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I said, what job, because I need, like, a day job while I'm here. Right, and I was like, what do you think will be the best job to get? And...
Did we answer that?
You said...
You're like, it was some funky ass answer. I don't know.
I think you said, you told me to, I should, I think you said, you know, start at like the management companies and agencies, because I get to learn everything there.
It's one good way, sure.
Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Like coming in as an intern or an assistant or something like that. I mean, everybody is probably going to tell you that. And here's the reason why. And at least in my opinion, you guys can please jump in on your opinion. My whole thing is, if you came here to be a writer, right?
Yeah.
In TV and film, whatever it is, why in the hell are you going to go and work in a hospital?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
How are you going to grow? Even if you have to grow slow, wouldn't it be better to be in a place?
The industry. That was the whole point of moving. Because me and my sister were both in between jobs in New York. And we were like, well, we could get another job in New York.
Right.
You know, something we don't want to do. Or we can just make the move, take a big risk, and hope we get a job there in the industry.
Right.
And it just seemed counterproductive to go back to doing something we hated. Like, of course, we're writing all the time in our free time, weekends, at night, commuting. But what was the point of hating the job? So then that messes up with your energy.
Right.
And then we keep making contacts. We keep hearing it's about relationships, about who you know. It's about cultivating relationships. How can you do that 3,000 miles away?
Right.
Well, so... It's all about relationships, and I just particularly in television. I mean, I don't know if you guys know this, but it's like, you know, there's a big battle that the WGA is going to have with the agents, like in 10 days, and the main thing is that they asked they did a survey of TV writers, and like, or just the writers in general. They're like, what's the percentage of people who got jobs from their agents? And
I don't think I know hardly anybody.
You know, and what they said is that 75% of people got jobs from people they know, not their agents.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that means that, you know, it's so hard to get jobs anyway. So it's like the people you know are the only ones who can get you a job, who let you know when something's up. I mean, and to me, I've had some industry jobs, and I've had a lot of jobs outside of the industry, because at a certain point of time, if you don't get the right job in the industry, you know, that's not your like writing job or something like that, then there's kind of like a salary cap on that. Just like, you're not going to get a lot of money. But when you're first coming out here and you have a lot of expenses, that might be fine. But there's interesting jobs you can get. I mean, the other night we were at the end of the finale screening for Deadly Class, and there's a friend of mine who I haven't seen in about a year or so. This guy named Darren, who was a post supervisor on that show, but I met him because he used to write on a Nickelodeon show, and he's just now he's between opportunities on that, and he was like, you know, and he was on Taken before that, and he's gonna get on the second season of Castle Rock, but he's like, look, the thing about this job as the post supervisor is, I'm in every meeting.
Every meeting.
And yeah. I hear everything that's a problem about the way it was written, the what, mm-hmm. what the directors did. Yeah. And it was like, it's making me a better writer because I understand what it is beyond once right. the script is turned in, right. that stuff that could have been solved at the script stage that most writers don't right. know, yeah. you know, particularly like the ones that are lower level because they never produce anything, like right. even their own stuff. Yeah. And so that's, you know, like a type of job. And, you know, and so you maybe can't come in as a supervisor, but you meet someone like that somewhere and they say, hey, so can I come in and be a post PA, mm-hmm. you know, and then a friend of mine is doing that now in my writer's group, and she has never done that. And it's like, and she said, what's the deal? And she's like, well, for a few months, it's going to be just sitting around and getting lunch orders. But, and then the rest of the day, the guy said, well, since you're a writer, you've got the whole afternoon to write. And mm-hmm. and no one cares if you're writing if there's no work to do, unless there's a few right. little jobs. Just, oh, can you get this, that, that? And then once it picks up again, like you're because I did that too. I worked as a in a post on something. And it's like you're on these kind of schedules when you're waiting for stuff to deliver or stuff is rendering, and you got this downtime. So yeah. and so that's an interesting job to have too. Right. I mean, if you could get a job at the studios, those are harder to get. But there's all those internships. Mm-hmm. There's just a lot of there's a lot of ways to get into jobs. I mean, what's his name?
There used to be the Page thing.
There used to be the Page thing. Yeah. They used to have that. I mean, a friend of mine had worked at the Writers Guild for a while just to mm-hmm. meet people. He would volunteer at the theater. You know, yep. I remember Joe Ferrante. Yep. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of ways because you got to meet people, and yeah. then you have those jobs that seem kind of like. You just had to be assertive
yeah.
and ask people for stuff. And I mean, there's the really, really great story that I think people forget. Mm-hmm. Actually, I know that everybody almost forget this is Antoine Fisher. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So this is maybe 20 years ago. Antoine Fisher was a security guard on the lot. Mm-hmm. And he was really good friends with all the big execs would come in, just say, hey, hey, mm-hmm. hey. Mm-hmm. And then
they would drive up.
Yeah. Yeah. Because he worked security. Right. And, you know, checking everyone's badges. So, I mean, so, and then I think someone saw that he had a script that he was working on. They mm-hmm. said, oh, what is that? Mm-hmm. And he said, I'll send it to you. And he's like, oh, I'll take a look at it. And then, you know, it was good. And then eventually, like, you know, he wrote a story about his life and Denzel Washington made his directing debut doing it. And mm-hmm. he did some other stuff. Mm-hmm. But, I mean.
Derek Luke.
Yeah, Derek Luke was in it. Yeah, so you kind of look at it as like, you know, even those kind of jobs that have you where you feel like you're not in the right place to interact with those people, if you comport yourself the right way mm-hmm. and you write, and there's enough people who are generous who will say, hey, can you know, you can't ask them. They got to yeah. ask you. Yeah. They got to ask you. Yeah. Then, you know, those opportunities can work. So that's what yeah. I'm going to suggest.
Yeah. yeah. And I wouldn't say that you can't ask them. You just have to develop a relationship. First. It shouldn't be like the first time you sit down. I swear to God, I came off the panel the other day. I was hanging out with Angela Allen. Right after she's producer on SWAT, and so she ended up giving me a ride home, and we were just talking, right? And we go way back to the Cosby mm-hmm. Fellowship, and so she was talking. She said, "Hilliard, have you noticed a shift?" I said, "In what?" She says, "I notice when you used to do panels before, people would say hi, whatever. So now they swarm you, mm-hmm. right? Because they know you're on the show, you got your podcast, you got mm-hmm. whatever. It's like a different mm-hmm. energy." Yeah. And I said, yeah, I guess there has been a shift. She says, welcome to Hollywood. It was an interesting yeah. thing. She says, imagine, she says, I'm going through this on a producer level. Imagine what Janine is going through as a showrunner.
Yeah. They swarmed her for like an hour after that.
Oh my God. And I'm like, give us some fucking room. Just say, hey, I love you. You are awesome. And walk the fuck out.
I was watching it and I was just like, well, see, I would not do that.
Well, see,
it's too ridiculous.
Much. Well, see,
people were pitching me. I was like, yeah, see, here's the etiquette.
See, that's one of the reasons.
And then I got this script. And then I got this script. I'm like,
that's one of the reasons why
I've been on the panel. Let me go.
It's not that I don't like to go to those things. It's great to hear the information, but I don't want to spend the time trying to interact with the people that right. and usually yeah. I mean like
look, you and I almost never do we just walk the fuck
you
out
know, but you have, like you have, because
we know most of them
most of them so what I do I'm there I mean like this is the thing we've got to there was a meeting about the agency thing about a month ago right. and like all the people on the board are people that I know and some you know they're all talking and I was like you know what they're getting mobbed with questions. Mm-hmm. I just want to just give them the wave so they see me. And they go, okay, cool. Right. And then that afternoon, I'm going to email them. Right. And say, hey, man, blah, blah, blah. Because, you know, like, I don't want to take up their energy, you know, then. So that's, like, the thing that you always got to worry about is, you know, like, everyone's energy is, like, is you have to respect that in a way that I know that, like, you want to get on and move quickly. And I'm not saying you have to wait, but you got to just kind of like pick and choose the time. Like, for instance, this guy that I got an email today, you know, it's like in the email that he sent back to me saying he's so cramped, he can't have lunch. I know it could be like he said it's something that we could hop on the phone and talk with. I know he wrote that. Right. And I was like,
He's cool about that.
But I'm saying to myself, if he's got to leave the country to prep a huge, huge premiere show on a streaming network, you know, this massive thing, he doesn't necessarily have that time to. Mm-hmm. And I had this time with a lot of people like that, is that you call them and say, let's go on the phone. And it's like, well, we're talking to my sister and schedule a 15-minute call. And I'm just like, if I can get him quick questions.
Yeah.
Then he can answer them throughout like his downtime in the week, you know, and then get back to me. Right. And then that's like.
So you emailed him?
I'm still getting the questions quick because I know.
See, a lot of people would just email them. Right, you got to think about what the questions are.
Really, really smart, right. And it's all right. And it's this thing that I've been doing when I email people is, I don't ask them just for help. I say, here's what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. What do you okay? So you understand what my strategy is. What do you think I else could be doing, or can you weigh in on my strategy, or blah blah blah? Because if I ask him a question that I could figure out by getting on the internet,
that drives me bananas.
Like, motherfucker, look that shit up.
Yes,
I did.
You're being lazy.
What's worse is I learned this shit when there was no internet.
Yes.
So I had to go do like some work.
Yeah.
Like he always,
and I talked about that the other night, didn't I?
I'm sure you've heard me talk. It's like the movies and stuff like that. I've watched all those, and I can just rattle. I mean, there was a time we were in there with Jenny, and she was like, blah, 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 and I was like, saying, oh, this person's in it. And it's like, I'm not looking shit up on the net. Mm-hmm. I spent all this time like learning it because it's a crutch for me to have to go, Robert Blake, because I didn't fucking remember his name on fucking Little Rascals.
Yeah, fucking 1930s or 40s.
But it's those things that you have to do to, again, that's respecting someone's time.
Right.
Because they will help you. And also, I'm giving him an out with saying, hey, let's not do the call. Yeah. Let's do this. You know, just give me opportunity to get back to me like before you go.
Right. Yeah.
And that's all I really want from him because, you know, it's pressing for me. But I have some time it's not as pressing for him. So that's why. Yeah. You know, like asking for help and asking people is such a skill. It's a huge skill.
And so what do you do about follow up? Like, let's say he said, oh, okay. What if he never got back to you? What would you do? Like, how do you follow up?
Well,
with someone when you're asking something.
Okay. Here's the thing. I always give people the out, like, if you can't answer this cause you're too busy, that's okay. I'll find another way. Because I have to say
it
that
takes
to them.
The pressure off.
It takes the pressure off of them, and that way, if I hit them up later, you know, two things happen. Mm-hmm. He knows that, like, he or she is going to know that I'm not going to hold it against them if they can't get back to me. And the thing is, if I did hold it against them, that makes me an asshole because it's like I'm not respecting them. So you just do that. I mean, if it's something where it's like, you know, like
there's a sense of urgency in it because you're saying. Don't even, if you don't get back to me, I'm going to figure it out. So it's making me go, oh shit, well, I better jump on this really quick. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, that was really good.
Yeah. You say, if you can't, that's fine. I mean, I've seen someone ask me this the other day and I was like, okay, I need to get back to them like today.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and I was like, and at the end of the night, I was like, oh, I gotta get better. I was like, oh shit, I gotta answer this person's email. You know? Because I was like, closing out emails. But it's one of those things where it's like, with other people I follow up, this is the thing that's tricky that you have to kind of like. A friend of mine was telling this. He was kind of like, give people like 8 days on emails of requests for things like, you know, like if I send you a script, I'm gonna give you 2 weekends,
right.
And then I'm gonna follow up every 8 days after that, you know, to see where it is. For other things, like if I, you know, I mean, it's just like, I mean,
do
just,
you change it by like depending on your relationship with the person? So
yes.
Say you were okay. So yes. If someone you have had a conversation with, you can kind of know.
It's not even that. It's more about like the level of where right. they are. Like yeah. I'm talking to these showrunners. It doesn't matter if these are like tight boys of mine. Mm-hmm. I'm asking the business thing, and I got to know that there's this. There's another guy who's a producer friend of mine. He's a movie producer friend of mine. Mm-hmm. You know, he and I sat down for lunch, you know, about a month ago. I was talking about this movie I was working on. He was like, I want to read it. And he's supposed to come to the reading, mm-hmm. and then he mm-hmm. couldn't because he had to go to town. And then I sent him an email. I said, here's the script. Blah, blah, blah. And then he didn't get back to me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay. And I waited 8 days. And I emailed him, and he was like, dude, I'm sorry, but the movie that I'm posting right now, I had to come in because we had to fire our pro supervisor. Mm-hmm. And I'm picking up a slack, so I'll get to it in a week. Mm-hmm. But it was like during that week that he didn't get back to me, mm-hmm. I'm not thinking he blew me off.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just, because he had well, some major shit busy. Happen.
Let's, mm-hmm. let's put this in a little bit of a context. This might help a lot of you younger writers. Think about it like this. You know how we're all busy?
Yeah.
Imagine, and let me ask you, how many emails do you get a day, just generally?
15.
Okay. I probably get 150 on my level.
Yeah.
So imagine a showrunner who's in the middle of a show,
yeah.
or especially about to prep for the pilot, even worse, right? Yeah. Somebody like that on a high-level, big-budget show that shoots in Europe, 50, all the logistics.
Yeah, $50 million an episode kind of
He's probably getting $2,000 a day, and I'm yeah. not exaggerating, yeah. like that. So for him to stop and even answer your email?
I know.
Is
I know.
Right. And a lot of people don't look at the context. They look at, oh, well, he didn't even get back to me, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And we talked about this on, I don't know if you guys heard the agency episode we did a week ago. and I admitted, I said, I have an issue where when I send stuff out to my friends and my producer friends, and like a month goes by and I'm like, them motherfuckers ain't interested. So I won't even respond. Yeah. I won't follow up. That's my bad. Right.
Yeah.
Because I put myself in their position, and be like, they're just so busy. They're just. It's not important.
That's what I was asking. I do that too.
Right.
But I'm like.
But you can at your level.
Yeah.
You can't. You have to follow through.
You have to follow up. You have see. This is the thing. Is just because there's always that fine line between are you being a pest or are you being persistent?
And finding that balance.
Finding that balance. And the thing is that you can tell. Okay, you know, there's a guy who wants me who I've done this four times for him in the last year and a half. I come in and I guest teach at his casting thing. Mm-hmm. And he's been asking me since I got back from Savannah if I could come in and do this thing. Now, mm-hmm. I've only been back 6 weeks, but I kept telling him, I was like, dude, I just don't have the time. I will, if I can make it work this day, I'll let you know like the week ahead of time.
Yeah.
And he emailed me and he texted me one time. Too many, you know?
Right.
Because
a little thirsty there,
well,
right?
You know, I mean, he texted me. I mean, it wasn't too many, but he texted me kind of like at an odd time. Like it was like really early in the morning, mm-hmm. something like that. It was really, really late at night or something like that. And I was like...
4 a.m.
And somebody got a crush on you, don't they?
And I'm saying to myself, it's okay, because it's like, look, it's like I have... A feature film that I'm outlining. I have three pilots that I'm working on that I'm rewriting, and there's one that two I'm rewriting, and one I'm just polishing, and there's one that I'm doing from scratch. And I'm working on a comic book, and I'm dealing with putting together the financing on this other feature film.
And you're doing your job.
Oh yeah, and I'm doing my job. Okay.
Yeah.
And so you know what? And it's like I'm not even getting that many emails because it's all but that's all my internal work. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so then this guy emails me out of the blue, and I'm like, okay, he texted me, and I was like, okay, it really pissed me off because I just told
Buddhist,
him
Buddhist,
but, Buddhist. Yes.
He's not being very zen in that
exactly.
moment.
Exactly.
Compassion.
Exactly. And I stopped and I said, okay, hold on. I just send me and I do this all the time. Is that I wrote an email real quick, and then I sat on it. And I woke up in the morning. I got up and I read it again.
You're like, ooh, I was laying in the morning,
and I was like. I still need this same sentiment of I will let you know if I'm free for that weekend or when I'm free
right. As you know? Per our last commitment.
You know, but see here's the thing. So this is the thing about all these communications, and this is why I stopped reading, why everyone does this, and this is worse now. But I remember when I went to see the Stanley Kubrick exhibit, this is maybe like 6 years ago at the museum, there was an article – So there was like there was this letter. There was some when he was making Lolita, the Christian Science Monitor people had sent him a letter to ask him to stop. He's like, this movie's trash and blah blah blah. And he was like, don't send a letter that you wouldn't feel comfortable if it got printed on the front page of the New York Times. And this
that's
and
a great note.
Yeah, great yeah, note. Yeah. But see now it's like don't send an email that someone can screenshot right.
exactly.
and send to somebody.
Right.
You know, because
right.
like look what this motherfucker said to me.
Right.
You know, we've right. all got the text from someone about the girlfriend or the boyfriend mm-hmm. tripping, blah blah blah. And it's like because that's what it is. So I was like, yeah. I gotta calm this down, just be very polite and say, how do I do it? Like, yeah. hey man, I'm really busy. And I had to explain to him, I was like, this, and I said, my head is exploding. Right. I would get, and I was kind of like, I can't be fair to your students if I get there and I'm worrying about the thing I got to do yeah. when I get home.
Yeah. Absolutely right.
So let me just get back to you like when I can. And, you know, I definitely want to do it, mm-hmm. but that's, you know, so let me know. I remember what it was. He had someone cancel in the last minute as a guest. Right. And he's like, hey, are you
yeah,
free
understand.
Today?
I understand
you
that.
That's what it was. It wasn't yeah. always, like, but that's what, it wasn't like he knew me too many.
Right.
But it was like, I had to like, you know, mm-hmm. there's that spike that happens because everything's happening to you. Yeah. And I feel these, you know, showrunners, mm-hmm. big producers, directors, is the same thing. Cause you get yeah. so many, I mean, like when I was in Savannah, I'm sitting there talking with Nick, you know, the showrunner. And it's like, he's dealing with like, there's three or four cuts that on episodes mm-hmm. that the network is sending him notes on. He's got to respond to, he's got to look at those cuts too on the video thing. Mm-hmm. He's got some of the actors who are asking him about stuff. He's mm-hmm. got the director mm-hmm. saying, hey, we got to do this. And we got to reshoot. Are you cool with this? Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know what? And he had just flown in that day. You know, and I'm just yeah. like, right. dude, that's a lot of work you got to handle, you know? Yeah. But he handled it, you know? Yeah. So
it's just a managerial situation.
And now, supervisor situation. Here's the thing where a lot of people make mistakes
yeah.
is that this is where Glenn is really awesome. Mm-hmm. Glenn Mazzara, he used to be a. Like the ER manager at a hospital or something like that. He had some really high stressful job like that mm-hmm. where some life or death shit is happening. So he understands how to deal with people's anxiety. Right. I think that's like a rare skill set because yeah. most writers wouldn't have that, you know. But that's where certain people. I mean, that's so much of your job right. is managing shit, you know, at a showrunner level. Mm-hmm. And those are people who can hire you. Those are people who can bypass all the shit.
Yeah.
You know, the studio, everyone like, who do you see? Who do you see? But I'm hiring him.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
mm-hmm.
you know, they get hired. And so that's why you got to really, that's why I bring this back. It's like you have to really kind of like design every communication with them
yeah.
so that they always respect you. And, yeah. and they'll respect you if you respect them.
Richard Scott brought us some donuts. Thank you, Richard.
Hey. Wait, grab one of are you trying to run away? Okay, I'm going to say it's like he's dropping off donuts and running out. Like,
running out? Let's see what we got here.
Oh, jeez.
Hold up. Wait a minute. Okay. Let me put some donuts right. in it.
That looks like a Boston cream pie. Fuck, man. Now you fucking with me.
You need some chocolate, Lisa.
I was going to say, you know, one of the things I had to learn is not to take things so personal when people don't respond yeah. back to you.
Richard.
Because when you start off as a baby writer, like, everything is so, they're not responding. And you have to remember, they're so busy, they're doing things too. Yeah. And I always did the thing where I call it like the three rule, which is basically if I had something and I emailed somebody and said, oh, you know, I'm going to send you this, blah, blah, blah. And then I'd wait for the first email. If I didn't hear mm-hmm. from them, I'll do that quick little follow-up. Hey, just touching bases. I know you're busy and, yeah. you know, things are kind of hectic. And then I wait. And if a couple months went by, it's like, oh, well, hey, I hope everything's okay. You know, next time maybe we're around. Mm-hmm. And just kind of three and then done. Yeah. And just not even trip too much about it, you know. Yeah. It's like either they're going to be interested and they'll respond.
Right.
And I just have to learn, like, you know what? That's just the business. You know, I've got my three little things. Mm-hmm. I responded. They didn't respond. Yeah, I'm just going to move it. Keep right. it moving. And if I run into them, I'll just realize, hey, you know, maybe they couldn't handle it that right. time or stuff is just going. Life happens.
Well, right. the reason why I was thinking about this when you brought it up, Chris, is what I realized is you have to follow through. Whether anything comes out of it at all, mm-hmm. you have to follow through. I'd say I love what you do, like give them 2 weekends. Explain to them why. Because remember, you had a reason why. And you have to put yourself in that position
so,
to see why.
Okay, when people, you know, you got to read so many scripts.
Right.
And no one really wants to read during the week. I mean, they can, but, you know, and my thing is you can catch people and get them on an undivided kind of reading binge on the weekend because they might be like, you know what, I'm gonna, on Sunday from 2 to 6, I'm going to read these scripts. And so I just kind of realized that it's like, now they might have to read 9 scripts that weekend. Mm-hmm. So, but, you know, so I just want to give them the opportunity to go through those 2 cycles of you know, that process of reading to get to my script. And, you know, and then the whole thing on that is I'm kind of like, I know they got to read maybe 9 and they're going to get through 4, whatever it is, mm-hmm. and just kind of do the brief. And then it also goes back to my thing about, like, and we talk about this all the time, it's like, how strong are those opening pages to get someone to say, hey, guess what, I've read 6.
Listen.
And I'm going to start this other guy's thing. If this first 3 pages don't get me, then I'm just going to, you know, pass it off the next weekend, or I'm just going to pass on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so then it makes you, it just kind of like amps up your decision on this decision on how good your work is going to be. Right. I mean, it's like, and to me, I'd rather have you read myself on the weekend anyway, just because who puts their phone on airplane mode during the week? They really can't, you know, but you could on the weekend. Right. So that's kind of why I give them that.
I was just going to say, even to take it, I don't want to say to take it a step further, but to look at it a different way is to think about, you know, you want some donuts, girl, is to think about it in a way where what you don't want is someone reading your script and they're not in a mood to read it.
Yeah.
Right. Because then you're not going to enjoy it no matter, I don't care if those pages pop. Mm-hmm. How many times have you read something that popped, but if you ain't in the mood, you don't even feel it.
And you're not in the headspace to really give it the respect.
So that's why you don't want them to feel pressure to read it now. You want them to feel like, take your time, you know, and I'll usually tell people, give me at least 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Because if I say it's going to take a week and I know it's not, I'm going to feel bad for myself that I didn't turn it in. And then I'm looking like an asshole, you know, because I couldn't. But your job is to hit me back and go, hey, haven't heard from you in, you know, in a couple of weeks. Where are you? You know, whatever. And I'll be like, you know, honestly, I haven't even fucking read it. I'll tell you the truth.
Yeah.
You know, but a lot of people are like, oh, you know, I'm busy, or I've started it, or I haven't, you know, whatever. But you just have to put yourself in their position and it'll take off the pressure.
Yeah, that's what I did. I'm really like asking because it kind of happened to me in a sense that, so I was querying a lot like last year.
You were what?
Last year, querying managers. Mm-hmm. Heard back from a few, maybe 5 Reddit, this one that I was pitching. Mm-hmm. And then one development exec at one of the big management companies got back and he said, hey, why don't you just send me 4 things that you have? So I sent him 4 things. Mm-hmm. He basically loved a pilot that I did.
Good.
And so he said, this was right before Christmas. So he said, so send it to me. I'll read it over Christmas break. Hit me up in January and we'll go from there.
Right.
So I did that. At first he said, you know, I didn't read it. Sorry, but give me another week. Mm-hmm. I did. I followed up that week. Mm-hmm. He said, I read it, loved it. So, do you happen to have a Bible? And I said, I don't, but
somebody's
I can do
music
one.
Is on.
My computer's malfunctioning. I apologize.
Okay.
And so I wrote the Bible for him. Mm-hmm. He said, okay, great. Because he wanted to show the Bible to one of the managers at the company.
Okay.
So he did that. And the manager said he liked it. So he said, let's have a call. And so we had a call. This was probably end of January. Mm-hmm. And it was great. And I said, actually, I'm moving to LA soon. So how about we meet when I get there? And so now I've been following up, and he actually, the manager asked to read 3 other things that I was talking about on the call. So I sent that to him.
So you got a lot of stuff. I love it. Mm-hmm. That's good.
And then so I followed
prolific.
Up with him.
Okay.
The week before we were going to land, I was like, hey, just remind you, I'm going to be here. Can we set up a meeting? And he said, so his assistant was on the chain, mm-hmm. and he said, I'll check with him. I'll make sure you get the meeting. But then now it's been 2 weeks after that, and we still haven't gotten the meeting like set up. So I'm just like worried.
And he does TV?
Yeah.
It's staffing and pilot season. It's busy.
There's 3 things going on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Staffing season's coming up. This agency thing is
taking everybody's time and attention.
What's going to happen is that the managers have to now do all the work that agents supposedly were doing. And they're not really geared for that.
Yeah.
But they know that there's, like, again, disruption. People don't know how to behave around it. I mean, it's just, and honestly, what happens is that they're looking at who they can sell now and who's making them money. Yep. And I feel that even if they love your work and they got to take something out that they can take out, so they wanted the Bible to present it as a full property, that's still not them getting paid for maybe 6 to 9 months.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's like, let's hold off on that. Yeah. You know, I mean,
he did say though that with the Bible thing, he did say that though, if he did do me something, he would get me, he wants to use it as a sample to get me a staffing position.
Well then, yeah, so then he's probably, this is the thing that I've learned the other day is that, and I've noticed all the time, but you just hear this thing, it's like, how are they selling you? How can they sell you? And everyone is probably so scared about what to do that they're like,
going
to
go with the people you know, who they know.
Like, they're going to go who they know.
It's not even necessarily who they know.
Well, I mean, who knows that they can sell something? They know, I can sell her. Easier. It's just easier.
Yeah, because like,
hey, credits help.
Credits help.
I know. Yeah.
If you want something, there's just a lot, you know. But granted, like, you know, like being a black woman, that's like a really hot commodity right now. Really hot commodity because everyone kind of wants that. So he's just. But again, it's like what show? It's like they don't even know what shows are getting picked up yet. So then this is a weird time. It's a good time to be. So you're lucky that you've been read, and you don't have to kind of like, you know, like ask them to do that like at this time. Mm-hmm. But now it's just like a time management thing about, you know, like.
And
like
I want to point out that you did something that most people
speak on.
I will have to speak on it. Can I testify in church right now?
Well,
it is Sunday.
You did something that most people, when he said, send me what you have four things. You sent him four things. Like you had shit to back it up.
Give me two weeks to finish this shit.
Right? You know, oh, I'm going to spend like the next 5 days, no sleep trying to hurry up and get something. You already had stuff ready to go, to pop.
That's
what, a lot of people don't have that.
That's the thing that Janine says all the time.
You know?
Janine says, be ready.
Hey.
Can you be ready when it comes? Because you never know when that opportunity is going
to
come.
Be ready.
I mean,
there
was a guy, I forget his name. This happened to me with something too, with John Rogers, I think. But this is a writing situation, is that there's a guy, he'd been out of work for a while. He went to the ABC thing or something like that. Mm-hmm. And he was at a bar, talking with a guy at a bar. And the guy was like, I'm looking for writers on my show. Mm-hmm. And it was, what's the show that had the Showtime thing with Don Cheadle?
Oh, not the
Black Mondays?
The new one.
The previous one, the old one.
Where he plays that, consultant.
House of Lies. House of Lies. Yeah.
Love that show. So it was showing
for House of Lies. Like, I was like, this is me. He goes, well, send me something. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he went home that night and sent him something like 2 a.m. And the guy texted him he texted him back by the time he woke up. He was like, let's meet. Mm-hmm. You know, because he sent him something that night, and the guy was happened to look at it then. I don't know what the fuck that's about, but, you know.
Timing.
But it's about mood, too.
And then he got the job. Right. He got the job, and he was on the job for like three seasons. So. Right.
And sometimes you'll connect with somebody and be like, curiosity will make you go, let me look at the first 3 pages and see how they are. And then you keep going. For example, on our show, I know for a fact that everybody who got staff are the people that they read the entire scripts. Mm-hmm. Everybody else, they read 7, 8 pages, 10 pages, 15, mm-hmm. whatever, and stopped. But eventually, they read all of our pages. So it's really up to you, you know, to stand out. Let's bring your sister on.
Okay.
Thank you, Amber.
Thank you.
Hey, man, wait. Are you on Twitter, Instagram, or anything? What you on?
I'm on Twitter. It's at Amber Sherelle, Sherelle.
Thank you.
Yay. We should have the other chair over there. Can they just, right there. Right,
yeah, we're going to rotate. Ring around. We're going to get you on too, Richard.
What?
We're going to get you on the mic too. You got to give us some bars though. Scoot all the way up. So introduce yourself, my girl.
My name is Danielle. I'm Amber's twin sister. We're from New Jersey. We actually just moved out to LA 3 weeks ago.
Wow. Now you prefer to write novels, or are you getting more into screenplays, or what's
cool? I prefer novels. Yeah, she's trying to convince me for like a year now. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, seriously, she's way better at it. So I'm like, what's the point?
Right.
And I feel like I'm much better at novels because I'm I like the long form writing. Mm-hmm. I like I'm crazy. I like every single word to be right. Like that's my thing. Like
Lisa's
and I like,
little sister over here.
what type of novels do you like writing?
Mostly the ones I have right now are romance. I have one that's a romantic thriller and a romantic.
Let me tell you something. What's going on right now? Mm-hmm. In Romancelandia. That's what we call it, Romancelandia. Because some of the things that we're seeing that are happening in terms of diversity, there's a big kerfluffle going on with romance novels. Yeah. For those of you who are writing, because writing is writing, and it, uh-huh. for romance novels, a lot of people are writing and changing those novels into screenplays. Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. going to be the hot new thing that's happening right now. Right. Mm-hmm. But in Romancelandia, what's been happening is, the case people don't know it, romance outsells everything.
Yeah. Right.
And it doesn't get the respect that it deserves, even though women are writing and creating, and there's some male writers too, but they are creating a product that breaks in billions, but we don't get the respect because they think it's women things and it's love and it's romance and, oh, that's not serious writing. Mm-hmm. Well, what's happening right now is what most people don't know is that the one of the biggest organizations that supports novel writing for romance is the Romance Writers Association of America, which was founded by a black woman.
Hmm.
Most people don't know this. And they just had the announcement for the Rita Awards. The Rita Awards is the RWA's biggest award for the best romance writing, whether it's historical, erotic romance, all of that. Well, they're having a, we call it Rita So White moment, like the Oscar So White, because all the nominations pretty much that came up were all white women.
Interesting.
No black woman mm-hmm. has ever won a Rita Award.
Ever won. Wow.
In the history.
And a black woman's
talking. In the history. And I reiterate... A black woman created the organization to support romance,
right.
And not nah. I gotta reach deep into blackness to let y'all know. Okay, so I'm excited to hear that you're into writing romance novels because I think it's a viable and it's a wonderful vehicle to get expression, especially for black women, especially for black women, and we're getting a lot of negative stuff about
mm-hmm.
us,
mm-hmm.
whether it's film, TV, and stuff like that. So for you to be novel writing, please consider thinking about screenwriting.
But see, this is the thing about novel writing. You said you like to have every word on the page. The great screenwriters do that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And they actually have to be more precise than maybe like only poets have to be more the most precise because...
Yes.
You have this finite real estate that, and you
Rico.
And you also, and you do one, you do one thing with screenwriting that, again, maybe post on this, but no one else does this, is you have to design how the page looks.
Mm-hmm.
Ding, 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 ding.
You have to design, because that's like a lot, that's part of the experience.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I would say the live thing about novel writing is more than 10, like I'm sure that like more than 10 people are going to read your work because if you write a screenplay, that may 10, 20 people might read it and then that's it because unless they make it,
right.
You know, because they're like, this is really good, but we don't have to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but also like a friend of mine.
You do short stories too or just?
We both started with short stories.
Yeah, because a friend of mine.
Because a lot of people are being staffed. By short stories too.
A lot of people.
Janine even talked about it the other night that she staffed.
And years ago, I would tell people this all the time with when The Wire stuff was coming out with David Simon. David Simon, a lot of writers he prefers to work with are novel writers.
You can tell in the writing.
If you can tell, like if you just took the first couple seasons of The Wire, like all the people he got, like Richard Price and all them, they were all novel writers. Mm-hmm. They weren't even screenwriters. Like he was bringing people like, guess what, bitch, we gonna teach you how to do this real quick. Because there's something in your voice and your novel that we need to carry onto the page. So we just want to make sure that you understand that.
What were you saying,
bring
Chris?
Bring that talent. Go ahead, Chris.
We interrupted and he forgot his damn
book. It's, you know, it's, I mean,
he got his writing book. He got his journal. He can write some things down.
Too fast. No, it's just the thing about writing novels and these people is that, you should write this. I mean, there's so many great, there's a lot of great writers who come from novelists. I think, this is what it is. I remember what I was going to say is that there's Sam Miller is an example of, you know, people will convert your stuff to screen, you know, and there's a woman that my mother taught writing. She, you know, she just put out two books in the last couple of years, and they're both being adapted. And there's one being the movie, and there's one being a TV miniseries for Netflix. So it's like, you know, if I were you, but there's if you write romance, I would try to get a book to who's ever doing that show, How to Make Love to a Black Woman.
Hmm.
It's like a new show that was just announced because they need that. And
it's a book first, right?
I don't know, but there's a show. It's a show. And it's like, hey, if you write romance, that's a way for it's like, hey, I can do this. Because that's how Leonard Chang got in. Like, he wrote novels for a long time. And he was like, when he got unjustified, they wanted him because it was like, you know how to like break the whole story on your own. Mm-hmm. You know, like you don't, that's the thing that happens with a lot of TV writers is that, you know, you're not asked to break the whole story. Mm-hmm. And as a novelist, you have to
know everything.
You know, and it just kind of helps you to come in with like, because I'm sure it's never the first idea that fits into your novel for these things. It's like, yeah, I got to go through 10, and it's all varied shit, and that's what you need in a writer's room.
Right. Absolutely. So, are you interested in doing TV and film?
Please say yes.
It's not that I'm against it. I just think that I'm so much better at novel writing. It would take me.
That's what I thought. I thought it would be horrible to learn a new skill.
No,
it's easier. You know, you have the hard part down pat already.
I guess I just have to try it.
It is a separate craft. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a new craft to understand and to learn. But I'm gonna tell you, as a huge, I actually prefer to read and write the actions and stuff more than I do the dialogue. Mm-hmm. And I can write the hell out of dialogue, but I prefer when I'm attracted, I will literally go through people's scripts and just read the actions and the description because I want to see how creative they are.
I want to see
how they set the tone. I want to see how they describe, you know, the characters
on the page. Using to make it
what adjective, what verbs, you know, all that. And so, to me, that's the nook and cranny. And you coming from novels, you have to, your first sentence in your novel, just like in a script. People don't realize the script is just like a novel.
Yep. I know. It's so
it's got to grab them just like that.
Yeah. I mean, this is my...
And the blurb on the back of your novel is basically your pitch. Right. Exactly.
This is my thing about the novel writing and the transfer. The thing is that each of the forms, and you know this from writing short stories, is that it's different than writing a novel. But there's, and I say, because like writing a novel, and you'd be great at it. And then you're just like, but there's just like a little tweak you got to do if you want to write a movie. And then from that, there's still like a slightly more tweak you have to do if you're going to write a TV show. And everyone thinks writing a TV show and writing a movie is the same. Mm-hmm. It's actually not. Because you're doing different things and you're expecting different things. And
I'm just saying that coming from it, understanding how to use those adjectives and verbs
It should, I mean, there's so many guys who, like, who's another great fucking novelist who jumped into TV? He was really good at Noah Hawley, who brought Fargo to the screen. Mm. He was a novelist. And, like, his novels have that kind of, like, this really heightened kind of like reality on the page, and so there you therefore like I was reading his pitch doc for that, and then you kind of go, oh, this is interesting. And at the time, I didn't know he was a novelist. I was just reading. I was like, oh, this is interesting the way he's writing this. And then he was a novelist. So I was like, oh, it makes sense.
Right.
Same thing with like Nick Pizzolatto or Pizzolatto, who did True Detective. Mm-hmm. He wrote, you know, Galveston and those short stories. And then. You know, he did a couple TV shows, like I think a couple episodes on that thing with Kevin Bacon, that murder mystery thing. Okay. He did, I can't remember. And then he jumped on to do True Detective. And True Detective, if you read the, and I can send you guys this if you want to see it. If you read the pitch document for True Detective, it's written the way a novelist write it, but it's so gripping.
Is it dense or is it?
I was gonna say for like there's a page for there's one page for Matthew McConaughey's character and then one page for Woody Harrelson's character. Okay. But it's the full page. It's the full page. And it's single spaced and it's the full page. Yeah. It's their whole characterization. Right. And I was like, okay, and there's no one else talking about. The murder, all that kind of shit is really backstoried. Mm. But you like he gave you so much density on those two characters that it's like I can see them do any journey. Okay. Because it's just a murder thing. The murder thing could be fucking anything. as long as these guys are doing it.
Right. That's just the through line.
It's the through line. Yeah. It was, I was like, fuck. Like, it's, and you read it in a way that you're reading like someone who is a really good novelist would do this. And it's, okay. and it's really, I'll send it to you.
Yeah, that's a good skill set to have, you know, to be able to write short stories, novels, and screen it. It's just to have that ability because you're getting in with people who all they know how to do is just like screenwrite.
Right.
And you may have a project that needs a little bit different than that. They need a different voice to see something different. And that's when they bring that, those novelists in. Like I said, David Simon didn't waste no dime. He was like, y'all know how to put a whole bitch, come on in. And a lot of novel writers who thought, I would never, but because they're doing stuff. So I just think it's a great step.
Let me ask you a question. Since you've written novels and short stories and everything, you've been published. Mm-hmm. What kind of advice would you give to somebody Danielle. Like this?
Oh, you got to be, it's what Stephen King has always told all of us writing babies. You got to be reading, and writing, no matter what.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not the type of person that advocates for people like, you got to write every day, like, or you're not a real writer. People have their own different styles and energy of how they write. But my thing is this, just because you're not physically writing something down, you could be reading. Yeah, you could be reading something. You could be thinking about something. You could be jotting down certain, he's trying to fix my mic, y'all. You just punch me in the
I just
face.
Need you to lift it a little bit more higher. That's all.
Higher.
There we go. Better. Perfect.
Gonna take you high. Wait, what was I talking about? Got me. Now I'm distracted now.
You talk about reading.
Yeah. Reading widely. Because one of the things that we get, especially if you're, for many writers, especially if you're writing certain genres, okay? If you're not reading wildly different things, you are just going to be boring.
Yeah.
And one of the things I've been noticing a lot of like scripts and things I've been reading, like I've been reading a lot of the Blacklist scripts and different scripts from different places, and I'm just saying, I can kind of tell when someone is not well read because they're using a lot of cliches,
a
lot of tropes that are like, been there, done that, show us something new. This is not going to get past page one. Like someone's going to read the two pages and be like, I've seen this. This is kind of derivative. Mm-hmm. What's new? So I would say you need to read Riley. But be writing something. Always be thinking about something. Do you journal at all? Write journals or keep a journal?
No. I judge myself too much when I journal.
Your journal should be like your safe space, though. Mm. That's your personal... And it could be something like I've been keeping a journal since fifth grade. Sometimes my journal could be sketches or thoughts. It could be quotes. It could be a conversation I heard in the coffee shop. Mm-hmm. When I'm talking about journaling, I'm just talking about just getting words down, listening to how people speak. Mm-hmm. One of the things that really makes a great writer pop is by learning how people's dialects, how language sounds. A lot of times we see stuff rhythm. That's written, it's very stilted, and it's very, very boring.
Right.
And so a lot of times I have a journal. I have my journal on my back.
Well, yeah, it's funny because it's...
And writing that stuff down.
That's something I do. I mean, I'm going to piggyback on a tooth. Like, something I do all the time is if I'm in the grocery store, I listen to people talk on the phone. And I just fucking like write down when I hear some cool ass little line.
I have stolen fingers.
Like, oh, hold on a minute, hold on. I was always in a grocery store because even a grocery store don't care.
Yes.
They're talking and not really caring. Which other spots you might maybe hear in a coffee shop, but I usually hear shit and you're like, did you just say that?
I'd be in there. Look,
because I just fucking heard you say that.
I go to the airport early already anyway because I like to sit and I listen. Hilarious. Like I've gotten some like one of my favorite. Okay, it's really terrible and it's nasty and I apologize, but you already know how. I am.
Yeah.
I was at Trader Joe's in line and somebody was talking and his couple brother was talking and stuff. And he said something that I died laughing when I heard it, but I thought I'm gonna put it somewhere in one description.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about I'll just say he was a player and he's like talking about, you know, his women's and stuff. And you know, I was like, All right, young man, all right. And he said and so he was talking and his other friend was sitting like, man, I just skeet and skedaddle. And I was like, Skeet and skedaddle.
That's good.
Bitch, do you not know I wrote that? I got in my car, wrote it in my journal, like, I don't know where this is gonna go.
Right.
This is gonna go in a screenplay description. It'll be like, this is the type of brother that will skeet and skedaddle.
Yeah.
And it's because instead of saying this person's a player and has a lot of
right.
You say skeet visually, it pops, totally, and it's like it tells you exactly about that character.
Person, it's hard,
and I wouldn't have gotten that if I hadn't been writing.
It is very old school,
But see, because like, I mean, this is my thing about the writing every day thing. I mean, like, I do write every day, because I might not be in front of the computer and, like, you know, and be on like Highland or Final Draft.
Right. But you're watching, you're listening, you're doing all this.
But to me, that's part of the process. I'm taking notes on my phone about shit that I hear or a phrase or about the reading stuff. It's like, again, okay, so like the other, I was saying this the other day, it's like I'm reading this book called The Aspirational Investor, and it's talking about like how people, how markets don't avoid the bubbles, you know? And he said historically one of the first bubbles there was the tulip fever bubble in the Netherlands in like the 1700s. I was like, oh, that could be a cool movie. And then I was like, but wait a minute, it sounds like a movie I've already seen or I knew of. And I looked it up and there was a book about it and a movie about it. And I was like, but it's like,
what's the my different take on it?
Yeah, but my point is that I'm reading a book about investments. And I found an idea that could work. That spurred me to think about
this way.
To think about a movie. You know, because I was like, oh, this could be this, and because it's like, you know, the thing I love about historical movies, particularly like those like ones that are like pre 20th century is there's all like what we know about history usually is some major event, you know, and the way people like respond to a major event, it's almost like a disaster, you know, like the French Revolution is a disaster the way that like one of these Dwayne Johnson movies are, you know, because
it's your big set piece,
it's affecting everybody, but it's lasting throughout. I mean, you know, like Dr. Zhivago is like some of my favorite movies because the fucking disaster is the Russian Revolution and also the battle of the Reds and the Whites afterwards. And this love story is thrown against that. And it just adds this inherent tension constantly because it doesn't matter where the fuck you walk, like in that country, shit could pop off and fuck your whole shit up.
The English Patient. I was going to say something. Oh, so this is probably going to be a little longer episode. We're going to do probably like a two-parter.
Sure.
I want to get all the people on.
Sure. And we still got to do our other stuff too. And
give everybody your
contact so you're all your info so they can follow you guys.
My Instagram is at GoCo Collective. It's GOCO Collective.
GoCo Collective. That's cute.
Yeah, that's my Instagram.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Of course.
Come on, Dallas.
Come on in. But I'm excited, a romance writer. Yes.
Awesome.
Can I just say this, even though I'm talking to you and it's on the air, this September, I'm actually going to New Orleans. They have the Black Women's Romance Writers thing. I went 2 years ago. So they're having a conference there for 3 days in New Orleans with all the different writers, especially those who are doing indie publishing. And we're also doing a cruise right after that. So we're doing the conference, Black Women who are writing romance, who are creating stuff. We're also talking about screenwriting and all that kinds of stuff. And they're running a cruise, so... I'm just letting you know.
I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real. Welcome to the Red Room. Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminishing, the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed. In the rent room, we let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want. Welcome to the Red Room.